The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Case 55 in the Blue Cliff Record, Dao Wu's Condolence Call. The Pointer. Secure and intimate with the whole of reality, one obtains realization right there. In contact with the flow, able to turn things around, one assumes responsibility directly. As for cutting off confusion in the light of a stone-struck spark or a flash of lightning, or towering up like a mile-high wall where one occupies the tiger's head and takes the tiger's tail, this I leave aside for the moment. Is there a way to help people by letting out a continuous path or not? To test, I cite this. Look. The case. Dao Wu and Qian Yuan went to a house to make a condolence call. Yuan hit the coffin and said, "Alive or dead?" The teacher Wu said, "I won't say alive and I won't say dead." Yuan said, "Why won't you say?" Wu said, "I won't say." Halfway back, as they were returning, Yuan said, "Tell me right away, teacher. If you don't tell me, I'll hit you." Wu said, "You may hit me, but I won't say." Yuan then hit him. Later, the teacher Dao Wu passed on. Yuan went to Shi Shuang, his Dharma brother, and brought up the foregoing story. Shuang said, "I won't say alive and I won't say dead." Yuan said, "Why won't you say?" Shuang said, "I won't say, I won't say." At these words, Yuan had an insight. One day, Yuan took a hoe into the teaching hall and crossed back and forth from east to west and west to east. Shuang said, "What are you doing?" Yuan said, "I'm looking for the relics of our late master." Shuang said, "Vast waves spread far and wide, foaming billows floods the skies. What relics of our late master are you looking for?" Shui Do added a comment saying, "Heavens, heavens." Yuan said, "This is just where I should apply effort." Later, Fu of Taiyuan said, "The late master's relics are still present." So here we are. Searching for the late master's relics. We've heard stories and we've caught glimpses. And we're walking back and forth around our living room or in our basement. Walking back and forth these days, sitting down and standing up, eating our food, resting our bodies, looking for this continuous path, the Dao, the Buddha way. We've heard so much about it, so much talking, so much has been written about it. And yet the matter is not clear, is it? We too come to each moment with our question. Something in our heart that is not at rest. This deep disquiet of the soul. Some longing so deep and so ancient, we don't know what to call it. Maybe sometimes so overwhelming we can barely bear it. Other times this longing so faint, we can't remember why we thought it would be a good idea to go on a Zen retreat. But yet there is something that draws us, some great question. And in this wonderful story, this wonderful student, Yuan, Qian Yuan. He wants to know. He doesn't want to be put off. His great question in the moment, there with the casket, with the body of a friend or neighbor. Someone who was there the day before, and now where is she? Where did she go? We might say the same of yesterday. We might say the same of our children or our parents or our friends. Yesterday, they were here with us. Where have they gone? Are they gone? Are they here? Is he alive? Is he dead? Am I alive? Am I dead? What is this, this great matter? In our reading today, Hakuin wrote about a great doubt. And we might say great longing. We might say great confusion. And part of our practice is to clarify our confusion. So that we can clearly be confused. No doubt about it, to move into this place. Of course, the old answers come up, and if you've been studying Zen or Buddhism for any length of time, you sort of know what the answers are. You've heard them again and again, but the answers you have heard are not your answers. Hakuin says, realize that this, this great matter of life and death, this seeing through, this awakening, cannot be handed down and cannot be explained. In the commentary of this koan, Dao Wu, the teacher, is often praised for his great kindness. And certainly he displays great confidence, we might say, a great faith There is his student, perhaps his greatly beloved student, the student who got to go with him to visit, to make the condolence call, and his student clearly in such distress. And Daowu's great kindness is to allow his student to trust where his student is, to trust that the Dharma is not separate from this great calling out. Chen Yuan calls out, please tell me, please. And each one of us calls out to the universe, calls out to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, calls out to the heart of hearts, to God, whatever word you use, there is a calling out that is human life. And there is this calling out, whether we are aware of it or not. We might say, no, I'm fine. I'm not afraid of death. We might say, no problem. Just want a little more lemonade, please. But there is beneath all of this, there is a great urgency. And this great urgency is the source of our Zen practice. There are many relaxation techniques, and there are many ways to work skillfully with the mind. But none of them touch this deepest place. And here in Zen, we are after that deepest place, that most true life, the life before the arising of time and the life after time's destruction. And this cannot be given to you, nor can you grasp it for yourself, not through your own efforts and not through someone else's efforts. There is no way forward. There is no path that leads out in front of you. There is only this great vast expanse, this great vibrating and dancing universe. And each particle, each point of that universe reflecting every other point of that universe without effort. Without effort. There is nowhere else to go. There is nothing else to do. But I have asked my dear colleagues, Mike Sensei and Melissa Roshi, to explain the matter a little further.
To pick up where David left off, right here. There's nothing to do. And where David began his talk, so here we are. Each of us manifesting the Dharma perfectly. Perfectly. Just as we are. And yet, in creeps that doubt, no, not me. That's true for them. They're teachers, they get it. Me, I don't get it. Not me. I read that Heart Sutra, and it says, so on to no old age and death, and also no ending of old age and death. I want to taste that because I'm standing here over a coffin, banging on a coffin, and I see death. Where do I find my liberation? No suffering, cause of suffering. I want that Dharma, not the one I've been given. Banging on the coffin, hitting the teacher. Give me what you've got. Looking outside of his own experience for something else. Who among us doesn't do this? And when this is what we do, what is the path? This question, this banging on the coffin. This is where we wake up. Right here as our hand smacks the wooden coffin. Bang, bang. Calling out to us this very moment, the possibility of awakening itself. Nowhere outside of it, not some future thing to be attained. Not somewhere where we imagine being different, where the content of our experience is not what it is, but in the very content of our life, in this very moment, here, here. The Dharma manifesting. And now an opportunity for Melissa to share a bit more.
So what an amazing moment this is right here that I'm feeling myself. The power of Mike Sensei and David Roshi's words, and the words themselves are almost irrelevant. The actual power for the way that we have all gathered here to do something that we don't completely understand because we can never completely understand it. And yet something pulls us, and the very thing that pulls us is what is already here, buried beneath layers of defenses and thoughts and made up stories about who we think we are and why we think we do this. At the very end of this koan, there's a verse, a poem that I won't read the whole thing, but I want to read the last couple of lines and comment on them because they're so relevant to what we've been talking about. This is a poem by Shui Do, who wrote a poem for almost every koan in this Blue Cliff collection. He says, the golden relics still exist right now. With white foaming waves flooding the skies, where can they be put? There's no place to put them. Even the one who returned to the West with one shoe has lost them. And this one who's returned to the West with one shoe, this is a reference to Bodhidharma, our great legendary ancestor who supposedly brought this practice from India to China, who met with the emperor of China, who asked him challenging questions, and he persistently responded with nothing and no, and I don't know. Very much like our friend here, Dao Wu, who responds to his student with, I won't say.
The story is that Bodhidharma, at the end of his life, died and was buried in a cave. A boulder was rolled in front of the cave. But later, just like another hero of our Western culture, somebody spotted him heading back to India. He was dead, but there he was on the path, alive or dead. And he was supposedly carrying one straw sandal. And so people went and they rolled away the boulder, and indeed the cave was empty. There was no one there, but there was one straw sandal. A little relic of the power of the way. And so Bodhidharma is evoked here because the answers are always the same. I can't tell you. I'm leaving. I am not staying. You must find out the answers yourself. And the answers are not anywhere outside of you. They are in your own heart. They've been there the whole time, but living in disguise, or buried so deep that we can barely feel them. What Zen does, Zen is a powerful technology, this simplicity of just sitting with this physical body that is ours for such a short time, that is so precious, sitting with it, watching all the uprisings of mind and emotion, the comings and goings of sensations and perceptions. And slowly, slowly, over days and months and years, over a lifetime, there's a wearing away. In Zen, we don't get anything, but we wear away the things that prevent us from seeing who we really are. So Zen teachers say, why did Bodhidharma come from the West? And there are many answers to this question in our koan stories, but it's the same question. Why are you practicing? What do you want? Does a dog have the Buddha nature? What is the truth of reality? Who do you think you are? Alive or dead? Alive or dead? Alive or dead? If you say one, you're wrong. If you say the other, you're wrong. What do you do? Knock on the coffin. Touch the skin of the recently deceased friend. Feel the coolness of this moment of being in connection, in communion with each other. This is all Zen has to offer. Thank you.
So please sit comfortably. And we'll look into the matter further. Coming forward with questions or comments, what's alive, what's touching you as we begin here. We'll begin with Jordan.
I guess I'll just out myself and embarrass myself. I don't really feel like I know what you're talking about at all. Like we point to this moment and it's like, what's so great about this moment? We point to our true self and I'm like, why would I want to be my true self? And like, you asked me about birth and death and like, I don't care. I just want to like help people and like maybe take a nap. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be looking for. So I don't really even know what these answers are. And it's all very frustrating. Like I just feel like I don't even know what the question is.
Yeah. So why did you come on retreat, Jordan?
I don't know. Yeah. I think I said that at the beginning. I don't know. And I've been trying to figure it out. And everybody's giving me a no answer. No one will tell me.
Yeah. Sounds familiar.
Right.
Yeah. I won't tell you.
Thanks.
Mike, do you want to tell him?
No.
but this is just to the point, Jordan, that this is the question that you're wrestling with, sincerely wrestling with, is why am I here? I get, and I really don't mean to make light of this. This is not a joke. And I know your sincerity as you ask this question. And the teaching is that in that asking the question, in this very place where you are, this is there is something here that is not yet clear to you. Yeah.
And I just want to say, if there was something that was clear, if you were able to say, I'm here because, I would say, not yet. So we keep showing up, keep meeting whatever's here. You're meeting your confusion and your distress about your confusion. That's what Zen offers. It's very unusual. It's not what other psychological paths or some spiritual paths offer. It's something bigger than anything that can be described.
Yeah. Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks, Jordan.
Will.
Thank you for the very powerful talk. If there's no way to get there, no way to sort of cause Buddha nature because it's already uncaused, why is the persistence so important? Why is the passion so important? It seems like it goes the opposite direction. That's tying you in knots and making you unhappy with where you are.
Yeah, you know, I would say that this is the weird paradoxical technology of Zen, that if you have a casual attitude towards it, you'll have a casual connection to your true self. If you have a passionate one, you'll have a passionate connection. And there really is a process of unfolding that happens. Awakening really is, it's real, but it's completely different for every person. There's no path that's the same because every question, every wondering is different. So, you know, you have to, I love questions that say, you know, what is Zen about, or what is it in Zen, blah, blah, blah. It's, what is it in you? What is
it? Yeah, but there is no path.
No, there's a path.
Except that there isn't, right?
Well, right. Yeah, dead or alive.
Is there a path or isn't there a path? Can it be laid out before you or not?
Right now I'm going with no, but
okay, so keep working at it.
and these knots, of course, in some ways, anything, as you say, any move you make is the wrong direction, but yet the true way circulates everywhere, and not one of your steps leads away from it. Mm-hmm. So I hope that's clear, Will. Thank you. Rich.
Yeah, this koan really has stayed with me more than others. And it really came up today thinking about a friend of mine who's on the altar, who died a couple of months ago from COVID, kind of unexpectedly, who was an old Zen friend. And what's interesting with this koan is we were good friends, then he moved away. I saw him once or twice in the last 20 years, hadn't really been in touch. And once he got sick, and then since he died, I think about him all the time. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I wouldn't say he wasn't dead to me, but he wasn't really, he's so alive to me all the time. And until this talk, I was thinking, you know, I keep reading about him and, you know, the memorials and I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm thinking about what we did together. And I'm thinking, oh, it's kind of sentimental living in the past. And then I'm looking at this koan and thinking, no, he's my dog and brother. I'm connecting with him. And I'm sad about it, but he's alive. He's more alive to me than he was, you know, when he was living in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. It's just,
yeah.
Well, you know, as I, I've been sitting here during this sesshin, I've been, for some reason, it's one of these sesshin where all the people that I've ever practiced with have been alive for me in a similar way that I think you're talking about. And, you know, I started practicing informally when I was a little kid, and then formally, you know, when I was in my late 20s, and then now 40 years later, here I am looking at a Zoom screen, and everybody's here. They're all here, all these people who guided me on the path or accompanied me. And actually some of them are literally here on the screen. That's funny.
Right, right.
But the Dogen is very clear about the way time moves, that we think it moves from past to present to future. It actually moves from past to present and from future to present. It's like always going in like this. And I think in the matter of life and death, you know, a lot of there's a person who constantly in my old Sangha used to mispronounce Bodhisattva Mahasattvas just to chant. This was like 40 years ago, really. And I think she's dead now. And she's still mispronouncing it in my heart. You know, it's so wonderful.
Right. So, wouldn't want to change it.
No, I wouldn't want to. And I'm so grateful that all the hearts that I've quivered with all these decades, they're all here. Everybody's here.
Yeah. Great. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Rich.
Eddie.
Thank you for the talk, David and Mike and Melissa. I've been thinking about this for a few days, and my sister died quite a few years ago. And, you know, I think of her every once in a while, like we all have been talking about. But I had a very big surprise maybe a few weeks ago. My son texted me, and he said he almost learned this song. I can't remember the name of it, but he plays a saxophone, and it's the, did you ever hear the Benny Hill saxophone song that goes to Benny Hill? Anyways, it's a very difficult song to learn. And the reason why he's telling me this is because my sister gave him the Boots Randolph album of this tune. And so it's not just me, it's in my sister, it's him. And so it's everywhere. So, you know, it's all these people that you touch, they don't forget. And so it was a tender moment for me, because I know how much she cared about him. And so I'm a little touched now just talking about it. But, and the other thing is, why do we come here? It's like, I don't have any idea, you know, sometimes, oh, I love being here, but sometimes it's difficult being here too. Like at the beginning of the sesshin, I was so wrapped up in what's going on politically that I could not lose it. Mm-hmm. And I kept saying, I'm coming here for refuge so that I don't have, but guess what? It was what it was. And I just had to say, I had to stay with it until it went away.
Yeah.
So that's the way it is for me anyway. So thank you.
Thank you.
You know, Eddie, I feel like you bring up an important point here, this why that we ask, which is so deep and so profound. Why are we here on retreat? What brought us here? We began with that. We find ourselves still living with that question. And some of us really struggling to answer with our minds. The answer is not presenting in a way where we can see a clear line of progress in our practice. But I still suffer. I still struggle with loss and shame and death and whatever else it might be. And we do find consolation sometimes in the teachings that that time in a way collapses as we sit and we begin to feel the fullness of the moment. But it's not something we can wrap our minds around. So all of us struggling to find the words to answer these questions, and the words will always fail. And if we imagine that we're going to find the answer through this kind of cognitive process, right? But it's, for some reason, it has to play out, doesn't it? We have to go through this cognitive process, and it is part of the Dharma manifesting, is all of our thoughts. But there's something deeper that we're all waking up to, that we're all finding, that's so present and alive for us, beyond the three realms of time, beyond life and death, before life and death.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Austin.
I think I'm here because I happen to be here. It's wherever I am, I happen to be there. Mm-hmm. I guess if you go further enough back, I'm here because my father deliberately or inadvertently didn't wear a rubber. So I'm here. And there are moments, and I can see my life as a film, which is really separate stills, but I see it as connected. But each moment is itself. How else can it be? Am I here to experience the moment? Well, it's a given. That's just the fact that we tend to want to avoid. So we let the past jump in to the moment. And then it's about sorrow from the past. That's fine. It's fine if it's a happiness from a happy memory. But for some reason, it's not natural, maybe, to just say, well, yeah, I'm here. There are moments that I experience. Do I want to experience them fully before they pass into die, live, die? Or do I want to have them dead on arrival and be in a dream? I'm babbling here. I know this. Yeah. But
yeah,
but we want to impose a reason on it.
Right.
We are here and moments are here.
Right.
And some and are happy so, and some are, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I really appreciate what you're saying, that, you know, this is the way it is, as we all have looked into it. And then how do we live that?
Right.
You know, that's why they call this practice, that all of these things, you know, in some ways so simple, an 8-year-old can say it, but an 80-year-old can barely practice it. And so from that place, from the place where we are, from the place wherever you are, Jordan, I so appreciated you starting off saying that this felt like it was about something else, because it's so easy to feel, well, yeah, maybe those other people feel passionate, but I'm just sort of, I don't know. But Austin, you speak so clearly, and then we enter in. Breath after breath, can I abandon everything? Abandon past and present, abandon life and death to appreciate just this. Yeah, thank you. John.
I'm reacting to a lot of the things people said, and Jordan, I want you to know you're not alone. I'm getting confused a lot of points in this thing. One of the things, and maybe a lot of people have experienced this themselves, that I've come close to dying several times. And one time when I was in my 30s, I was riding a bike in a park, and it was a beautiful park, beautiful day. And all of a sudden I heard a crash. I turn around, and just about 30 feet behind me, a tree had fallen down. Mm-hmm. And it was a big oak. And I look and I said, 10 seconds slower, I would have been under that tree and dead. Mm-hmm. Half an hour earlier, I would just see a tree on the path.
Yeah.
I'll leave it there.
Actually, how it is. Yeah. You know, this is what we call karma. It's this infinite number of causes and conditions that have brought us here. And if we try to backtrack and make, we have to delete almost everything that happened to make a nice narrative that led us here. But it's unknowable, really. Here we are. And yeah. I think Austin was kind of pointing to this. And that, yeah, what a wonderful thing that that didn't happen. And so many other things didn't happen. And so many other things did happen.
And here, that's true. Hey,
here you are. How wonderful. Yeah.
You know, John, I'd like to bring up one other thought. We heard from the ghost last night. This is an apparition, a soul whose body has departed from the earth, if you will, calling back to us as practitioners, saying, life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. Each of us should strive to awaken. Sometimes these near-death experiences can remind us of this impermanence of our life and be a wake-up call for us, that call us to practice, to really awaken to our life, just as it is, you know. And so many of us unsure, but wait, this content isn't the content it's supposed to be. Well, it's life. It's your life. Do we want to be able to appreciate it just as it is? Appreciate it doesn't mean necessarily enjoy, like, good, bad. That's all beyond the point. But can we really awaken to it and be intimate with it?
Yeah, great, thanks. Brad.
Well, I'm finding myself sleepy and I've had enough rest and I fall asleep, I go forward, and pretty soon I'm going to hit my forehead on the coffee table that's holding my screen up and have a big welt on my forehead. And so if you see that, I think it's a mark of my discouragement or frustration. It seems very difficult to know how to proceed, how to practice. It almost seems like any effort I make gets in the way. Mm-hmm. Can it go on autopilot, where like a car that you don't have to steer? Is it practicing without me, or do I have to be there? I think we
have the autopilot feature that we sell as a separate package, but you can upgrade to that retreat if you'd like.
If you donate $1 trillion to the, yeah, we'll give it to you. I'm so impressed that you said this after Mike Sensei said what he said about the ghost chant last night, because there is a lot of confusion about the difference between striving and effort, right? Mm-hmm. So we talk about effort that is aligned. The mm-hmm. translation is often right, but it doesn't mean right as opposed to wrong. It means in alignment with the way things are, in alignment with the awakened heart. When we're practicing and we're striving, we're almost always opposing something. We're saying, no, 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 it shouldn't be like this. It should be like this. And it gets very, you know, in this sort of endless battle. So that's not the kind of striving we're talking about. Instead, it's sometimes called bodhicitta. It's the heart mind of awakening. And it's already here. And it's trying to, you know, it's trying to run our lives for us, but we have so much stuff in the way that doesn't let that happen. And when we find the sweet spot where we're going with the current, that then we know it actually, because woof, it's just like, oh, I'm awake again. I was falling asleep, and you know, when you said that's the mark, I was thinking you'll have a mark on your forehead. That'll be the mark of your delusion, right? But it's also the mark of awakening. It's like sometimes, you know, hitting your head on the counter. We don't approve of this, but you know, this is why we at our in-person retreats, we still use the encouragement stick, the kiyosaku. It's like, come on already, cut it out, get with the program. And the program is who you really are. So if you feel any effortful striving that's kind of oppositional, that's not it. But if you feel like an energized alignment, oh yeah. And then the thing that happens to me over and over and over again, when I feel that energized alignment, my ego and my mind come in and go, you are there, how wonderful. And then I'm gone, you know, that, right? So it's a very delicate thing that we get used to over many periods of practice. And we stop interfering with it.
All right.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, so thanks, Brett.
We'll take two more, or maybe three here. Bill.
Yes, hi. Thank you again to all three for really very powerful talks. And in particular, when Mike said that I am an example of the Dharma perfectly unfolding, I think, really? And when Melissa says, you are the answer, you have the answers inside. And I know both these comments are completely true. I know it. I feel it. I experience it to be completely true. But yet I have these, for example, a nagging anxiety problem where I wake up every morning with my heart pounding every morning unfailingly. And it's my constant companion. It's almost my Mara, you might say, that I've sort of come to not be affectionate towards, but sort of accept that, you know, this is me. So, So I guess I'm still looking for some answers, and I'm still saying really, really, though I know it all to be true. Thank you.
And I think it's so important not to know more than we know. Like Bill, I really appreciate, because it's easy to say, oh yeah, I know that, but it's level after level. And me too, you know, when I really get, oh my goodness, is it really me? Is it really here? I mean, really, really. And then our practice slowly over time, or sometimes quite quickly, teaches us. And that's why wherever you are, it's just the beginning. The Dharma is vast and subtle. There is no end to this work. Yeah.
Thanks. You know, I want to just add to that. I actually really love the question, really?
Yeah.
I think that's so beautiful. You know, talk about our three-legged stool and doubt being one of them. Because it encourages you to look more deeply, to stay with it and keep looking and stay curious and wondering. And that's the heart of the practice for me.
Yeah, wonderful, thanks. Barry.
I'm 73 and I've never lived through an era where the media report deaths every day at these high rates. It's like deaths everywhere. And I went to Gillette the other day and got an injection for COVID, and I felt this burst of joy that maybe I wouldn't die from COVID and asthma after all. Sure. And I have this Bodhidharma tattoo on my left shoulder, and she gave me the shot in the Bodhidharma tattoo. Mm. And she put the Band-Aid over his mouth, and she told me that's what she was doing. And I sent a photograph of that to David Roshi, and he said, it's about time someone told Bodhidharma to shut up. And I thought that was so hilarious. And well, he's talking loud and clear today is what I think. Thank you all.
You better shut up, Barry.
I really should shut up, but it's so hard for me.
No, thank you so much. Yeah, how wonderful all of these things here.
Well, and you know, this deep teaching from Bodhidharma, when the emperor of China asked him who he was, mm-hmm. and he said, He said, literally, he said, no knowing, those two words in Chinese. We often say, I don't know. David's teacher's teacher, Sung San, said, only don't know. You know, this sounds good until you really investigate it. What do you mean? I know all kinds of stuff. And I'll have to say, really? You know, do you? What? Do any of us? That's the settling in place.
Yeah, thanks. And last comment and word, Joe, you put your hand up and you will not escape.
Unlike the other two people who put their hands up and put them down again.
I was trying to put my hand down and figured maybe what I was going to say wasn't that important. I was just wondering what kind of deal you guys are running here, because every whole question seems to get answered with a question. I've come here for enlightenment, and I just have gotten more questions. So I don't know. If there's a suggestion box, I'm looking for it. The interesting thing for what's happened so far with coming up, that I was thinking of a Dharma talk I heard a long time ago from Josh Bartok, and he kind of had a theme where he would talk about the difference between meditating and meditating, like, you know, and that feeling you get, and Melissa Roshi kind of touched on this, that feeling you get when you're centered and settled and with what's going on, and that feeling you get when you're kind of just forcing it. And that's kind of a general thought I had towards taking that outside and looking at my life and what's arising around me the same way, and accepting the fact that there's both life and death at the same time, and that there's heartache and sadness and sickness and all these things. And then also remembering the joy and the happiness and the good things, and having the gratitude about what's happening. And all this just brings more questions to investigate. So thank you.
That's right.
You know, Joe, sometimes, even when we're practicing badly, you know, we're striving too much or whatnot, you know, the practice then is just to meet striving, and to see that, to experience whatever is happening as fully as we can, you know, and that includes the questions that we have. Why am I here? Why am I here? You know, your question is exactly the point.
And on that note, let's take a few more breaths and then we'll move into Kinin.